This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
we will see most likely a continuation of politics by military means. We will see a struggle of will between the belligerent parties until either one side collapses totally or until both sides are not able to continue the war. Right now, unfortunately, Libya is simply not exhausted enough for a political solution.
That's Wolfgang Puschtei, security analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations, on Libya's prospects after the resignation of the UN envoy. Details coming up. Also, officials in Senegal are urging calm after confirming the country's first case of coronavirus. And fresh clashes between Cameroon's military and separatists have left at least 16 people dead. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, officials in Senegal are urging calm after confirming the country's first case of coronavirus and only the second in sub-Saharan Africa. The patient is a French national who returned to Dakar last week after a vacation in France. Anika Hammerschlag reports from Dakar.
Senegalese officials are asking the public to remain calm after confirming the country's first case of coronavirus, or COVID-19. The patient is a Frenchman living in Senegal who returned from a vacation to France on February 26. He had visited Nîmes and a ski resort in the French Alps. Dr. Ousmane Gaye is with Senegal's Ministry of Health. He says the patient had a high fever, sore throat, headaches, and weakness, but is now in stable condition and at Dakar's Fan Hospital. Guy says the ministry has been in contact with the plane's other passengers and that none are showing symptoms. He says there's not a single Senegalese person who is infected, both outside and inside the country. People should not panic, he says. They should stay calm. But business owners are already starting to worry. Abdouba is an airport chauffeur. Just hours after news of the case surfaced, one of his clients canceled their trip. Ba said he's expecting many other cancellations to follow. He's also concerned for his health and has been avoiding physical contact with his clients for the last several weeks.
Par exemple, de ne plus saluer les passagers à l'aéroport.
For example, he says he no longer touches his clients when he greets them, and he asks them to sit in the back seat. He's just taking precautions, he says, because no one is safe from the virus. The Senegalese government has installed thermal cameras at Dakar's airport, which can detect if a traveler has a fever. But Ba said he'd like to see more safeguards, such as more health ministry personnel stationed at the airport. English school teacher Hélène Colli says she feels vulnerable, as her job also requires her to be in daily close contact with many people.
Children are still going to school. We teachers are still going to school. We don't know what to do, how to protect ourselves. We just are moving on. Life is going on as if nothing is happening here.
The infection in Senegal is the second to hit sub-Saharan Africa after Nigeria confirmed a case in an Italian national last week. Health officials worry the virus could spread quickly if it gets into African countries with weak healthcare systems or those with close transport and trade ties to China, where the outbreak started. To reduce the chance of spreading the virus, doctors recommend washing hands with soap, avoid contact with those infected, and cleaning frequently touched surfaces like countertops and doorknobs. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar.
As the coronavirus spreads globally, Zimbabwe says it is ready for the virus despite a struggling healthcare sector and a collapsing economy. While critics say the country is unprepared to prevent an outbreak, the cash-strapped government says it is 100% certain that it is covered and prepared for the virus. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Describing the coronavirus as a catastrophe which awaits us, Zimbabwe Health Minister Obadiah Moyo told journalist Mandan that the country had learned from previous cholera epidemics and is prepared to tackle the disease, also known as COVID-19.
Before people come in to Zimbabwe, we now have the intelligence to be able to tell from the manifest that an individual will be coming from an infected country. Right? So our surveillance is strong, and we have even made it better by getting the latest in the technology of thermal detectors. In each and every country where you go, is that determinant which is the first one to trigger off the rest of the alarms. So we are 100% certain that we are covered.
But Dr. Norman Matara from Zimbabwe's Association of Doctors for Human Rights fears the country's decrepit healthcare system is not ready for the challenge. Matara says Zimbabwe lacks the facilities and equipment to tackle a coronavirus epidemic.
Right now, we only have Wilkins Hospital. It does not have adequate resources. Also, we do not have proper adequate ICU beds at Wilkins. You know, with the serious infections, what we have noticed in China is that they have to undergo assisted breathing with ventilators. Also, even the protective gear for the health workers themselves, they are actually being placed under a health hazard if they are to face a patient with suspected COVID-19. So I think if that thing comes here, it is going to be a disaster.
To prepare for coronavirus, Zimbabwe has sought assistance from UN agencies such as UNICEF and the World Health Organization. Dr. Wilfred Ngoma is the acting representative of the WHO in Zimbabwe. He says African countries, including Zimbabwe, must do better to diagnose the virus and prevent it from spreading.
What WHO expects, which is being implemented in the African region now, is for the countries to take responsibility for controlling it, to eliminate contact, to reduce transmission, and to manage cases that have already arrived. We are hoping that the few countries that have already reported cases will manage those cases and will be able to contain transmission. But every country needs to be ready, and no country should think that they are ready enough at this point.
The WHO is urging African states to carry out public information campaigns on virus prevention, such as encouraging hand washing, sanitation, and the reporting of symptoms. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Fresh clashes between Cameroon's military and separatists have left at least 16 people dead since Sunday, including women and children. The military says one of the attacks in the northwestern village of Babanki was provoked by rebels who beheaded a soldier dispatched to protect civilians. But Babanki villagers who fled to safety blame both the rebels and the military for atrocities. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
In a video shared on social media that has sent shockwaves among Cameroonians, armed men in red shirts claiming to be rebel fighters display and kiss the decapitated head of a soldier. Tens of villagers watch helplessly as the rebels say they will crush anyone who stands in their way to self-determination. Brigadier General Valenka is commander of Cameroon's troops in the northwest, where they are fighting the separatists. He says the video was recorded in the English-speaking village of Babanki, where one of his men, dispatched to protect civilians, was killed and his head chopped off. Nkar says after the gruesome video surfaced, he launched an attack over the weekend on the rebels in Babanki. He says they killed 10 rebel fighters, including their general, seized many war weapons and two vehicles, and rescued one hostage. Nkar says his men will continue destroying the rebels if they fail to lay down their weapons and surrender. However, local media reported that besides the rebels, who call themselves Ambazonians, 6 civilians, including children, were killed in the clash and 6 houses torched. Rebel leader Samuel Sako says the men in the video were acting on military instructions to discredit the separatists. In another video circulated on social media on March 2nd, he asserts the military killed numerous women and children in recent attacks.
They are not targeting our soldiers because they cannot face them. They're going about in the communities that they pretend to protect, pulling people from their houses and shooting them, killing babies. I am sick and tired.
Cameroon's military said Tuesday that 3 of the fighters they shot in Babanki were women and acknowledged that civilians could have been killed as collateral damage. But the military rejected the possibility that troops would have targeted civilians despite accounts from villagers. 31-year-old nurse Grace Vubansi says she fled the violence in Babanki to Yaoundé. She saw the body of a baby and her mother dumped at the village square, she says, and her colleagues said villagers buried 4 other bodies.
We cannot have a military that claims that it protects people when they only come after the Ambazonians have come and killed people, and then they come and start killing without even seeing where the problem is or even attacking the Ambazonian fighters.
The clashes in Babanki comes just 2 weeks after a similar military attack in the northwest village of Ngarbu left at least 22 people dead, including a woman and 4 children. The government of Cameroon says the 5 civilians got caught up in the fighting, while critics labeled the attack a massacre. After international pressure, Yaoundé created a commission of inquiry to investigate the deaths. Cameroon deployed over 1,000 additional troops to its English-speaking regions in January ahead of February 9 elections that rebels vowed to disrupt. The troops have remained as the Constitutional Council ordered a rerun of polls in parts of the English-speaking regions. The council found the military collaborated with the government to commit election fraud and ballot stuffing. Cameroon's government has rejected the accusations. Cameroon's Anglophone rebels have been fighting since 2017 to create an independent English-speaking state in the majority French-speaking country's western regions. The UN says the conflict has cost more than 3,000 lives and forced 500,000 to flee to French-speaking regions of Cameroon or into neighboring Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
18 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The UN envoy for Libya, Aghassan Salami, submitted his resignation after nearly 3 years in the post. Salami said the international community had not done enough to support his mission to end the conflict in Libya, especially countries that support one or the other of the warring sides. An international summit in Berlin in January declared that the dozen countries participating pledged to end the flow of weapons and armed personnel into Libya, but that promise was broken immediately after the summit. Salama recently was mediating 3-tier talks between Libya's warring sides on economic, political, and military tracks, but the continued fighting made negotiations an impossible mission. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed the impact of Salami's resignation on what is next for Libya with Wolfgang Porchtai, security analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations.
Ghassan Salami was probably the UN special representative with the very best understanding of the situation in Libya of all the special representatives since 2011. He was also an Arab speaker, and this made communication much more easier for him. But his freedom of action was severely limited from the very beginning by the French initiative for quick elections, just before Salamé took over his job in summer 2017. I would say his main mistake was insisting on the already failed UN-brokered Libya political agreement, the Shkir agreement, which was signed in December 2015. Actually, in December 2017, there would have been a good opportunity to move on from this agreement, as it was intended only for an interim period of 2 years, and one could argue that it expired in December 2017. However, Salamé did not so. And regarding his resignation, this means certainly an end to the post-Berlin-Geneva talks about the real ceasefire and about the political solution of the conflict in Libya. But I would say, after the recent full resumption of hostilities from both sides, the process was dead anyway. Now, for his success, it is necessary to work on an entirely new peace plan, so to leave the Shkir agreement behind. And Salamé's exit could provide a new opportunity for this. We'll see in the next months.
An international summit in Berlin in January declared that the dozen countries participating pledged to end the flow of weapons and armed personnel to Libya. But that promise was broken immediately after the summit. Who can stop the regional interference in Libya if the United Nations Security Council could not?
No one can stop it. The weapon deliveries and the interference will continue. Military implementation of the arms embargo would require to enforce it against the NATO nation Turkey, and this is politically entirely unrealistic. An enforcement against Libya's neighbor Egypt and the transportation flights arriving from the Emirates is militarily unrealistic. The upcoming EU maritime operation has the mandate to do so, but I doubt that they will be able, keeping also in mind that the Europeans have currently their own troubles with Turkey about migration. By the way, I would like to mention also that this operation is named Irene. Irene was also the code word for the start of the hunt for General Idid and the subsequent Battle of Mogadishu in 1993. I'm not sure that this is a good omen for this upcoming EU operation. The attempted political implementation failed already in Berlin or after Berlin. An economic enforcement of the sanction is simply also not realistic. No one will sanction Turkey or Egypt or Qatar or the Emirates over Libya. So we can forget about the regional interference can be stopped in any way.
Salamé had recently been mediating three-tier talks between Libya's warring sides on economic, political, and military tracks. However, the continued fighting made negotiations an impossible mission for him. What are the possible scenarios in Libya with the collapse of the ceasefire and the different levels of negotiations as well?
We will see most likely a continuation of politics by military means. We will see a struggle of will between the belligerent parties until either one side collapses totally or until both sides are not able to continue the war. Right now, unfortunately, Libya is simply not exhausted enough for a political solution. I'm pretty sure that this will continue as well, as both parties have their key international supporters, and any of these international supporters would risk, if they would stop the support one-sided, that his proxy in Libya would lose the conflict. Neither Turkey nor Egypt are willing to risk this.
VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy speaking with Wolfgang Poshtai, security analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations. South Africa's economy has officially entered into a recession. Today's announcement came from Statistics South Africa. The country's gross domestic product contracted by 1.4% in the fourth quarter of 2019. That followed a 0.8% contraction in the previous quarter. Experts say this could double the country's economic problems. Tuso Kumalo explains from Johannesburg.
Experts have warned that the recession, which is the decline in economic growth for two successive quarters, is clear evidence that the economy is in trouble. According to Statistics South Africa, South Africa's economy grew by a mere 0.2% in 2019. The recession was triggered by significant poor performance of key sectors including agriculture, transport and communication, construction, electricity, gas and water. Michael Manamela is the chief director for national accounts at Statistics South Africa.
In relation to the biggest negative contributors, the transport sector was down 7.2%. largely coming from declines in both passenger and freight transportation as well as transport support services. We also saw a decline in trade of 3.8%, largely coming from decline in wholesale trade, motor trade, as well as accommodation.
Maudi Lentoyan, economic expert, says there were clear signs that the economy was heading into recession.
Taking into account what really transpired in the fourth quarter, we had load shedding, electricity cuts, and that's the biggest impact, remember. You know, the economy that cannot be guaranteed a constant supply of electricity is certainly going to come under a lot of pressure. So they came in a lot worse than what we expected. So it's quite tough.
Small businesses, which dominate the economic scene in South Africa, are the worst affected by electricity cuts as they cannot afford generators used as backup power by big businesses. Some have put the blame squarely on President Cyril Ramaphosa's doorstep. They accuse him of failing to take decisive action on economic matters in a bid to balance interests of different factions within the ruling African National Congress Party and its alliance partners. Recently, there have been calls for the government to privatize struggling state-owned enterprises, but this has been resisted by the Congress of South African Trade Unions, an ANC alliance partner. The government has been forced to fork out millions of dollars to bail out these enterprises. Letswana says the government should know that the time to act is now or never.
There seems to be lack of agency, particularly into implementing some of these great plans that they came up with, whether it's through the Minister of Finance, who's come up with some really progressive proposals. The unions are not too keen on some of those suggestions. That means we're going to drag forever in terms of implementing some of those suggestions. And that's where the biggest challenge is.
Letswana warns that lack of action will result in more job losses, increased poverty, and lack of service delivery that could cause social unrest. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Justin Twait, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to sukus, afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.